So we're just reviewing quickly at the bottom of Chavav and Bet that Ula made a statement. Then Ilana Samuch Lametzar, if you have a tree right on the border, Toch Sheshitzrei Amah, within 60 Amot, Gazlanu, that you're Gazlan. And the basic premise is that tree is Yenika. The Yenika of the tree extends 16 Amot, the roots extend 16 Amot. And if you're within 16 Amot of the border, right, then they're already going to be Yonik. They are drawing their sustenance from your friend's property. And that would be either inappropriate, and therefore you could not, couldn't be classified as Artzachan, you can't bring Bikurim, or you literally are a Gazlan in the sense that you are, right, gaining from your friend's property and you haven't distanced the tree properly from that location. So Gemara wants to know, where did Ula come up with this 16 Amot? Where does he know that this is true of 16 Amot? So the Gemara yesterday, what we left off with was the possibility of Eser Nitiot being the source of this, meaning that according to Ula, the tree requires 16 amot in every direction. So if I take an area of 16 amot around, if I take an area which is basically a shetach of 32 by 32, a squared out area is a 32 amot by 32 amot, which is 1,024 square amot. So that's the Gemara saying, okay, where do you get a shetach so big that a tree is entitled to? Right, so now the Gemara tried with Eser Nitiot. The Gemara says by an Eser Nitiot, right, which you have, you can see over here on your on the sheets, here's Ula's position, which is 32 by 32. The first, the Gemara tried Eser Nitiot. Eser Nitiot are within a Beit Sa'ah. A Beit Sa'ah is 50 by 50, which is 2,500 square amot. Right, so it's 2,500 square amot. Right, the Gemara says, well, if I am a chalek, the 2,500 square amot to each tree, the 10 of the trees that are located on the property, then I end up with 2,500 divided by 10 is 250 square amot per tree, which is nowhere near the amount that Ula had suggested, which is that you need 1,024 square amot per tree. So now the Gemara is going to attempt the second proof, and which will in the end, with some adjustment, will end up being the proof. Ve'ela. So it's the second to last line on Chavamur Bet. Ve'ela mitznan shlosha ilanot shel gimel b'nei adam. If there are three trees that belong to three different individuals, ha'elu mitztarfin v'choshim kol b'tza'a b'shvilan. So similar over here, we're dealing with Erev Shvi'it, right? Erev Shvi'it, there are different, we call stop points for when you're allowed to work the ground. We just had one of them, which was Eser Nitiot, there's Alach L'Moshe Mi'Sinai, by saplings, they allowed to plow straight up to Rosh Hashanah. The two other stop points before that are Shavuot and Pesach. So when it comes to Tvu'ah, when it comes to grains and regular fields, you have to stop by Pesach. Sdei Elanot, fields that include trees in them, you're allowed to go all the way until Shavuot. So this Mishnah is describing what is classified as a Steilan. Right? So a Steilan here, if you have three trees in a Beit Sa'ah, right, then that is classified as a Steilan, and you may plow this field until Shavuot. The whole field, the whole Beit Sa'ah. As opposed to if they were individual trees, then you're only allowed to plow around the trees until Shavuot, but the rest of the field with a classification of a state Tevu'ah. A state Tevu'ah has to stop already at Pesach time. So now this, the Gemara has three trees in an area, Shetach, which is a Beit Sa'ah. So now a Beit Sa'ah, we just said, right before, this is the third square down here, a Beit Sa'ah is 50 by 50, which means that you have 2,500 square amot. That's what the Gemara says, right? So, kama havilu, how much is that when you're in a Beit Sa'ah? Tre alfa vehe me'ah, right? So if I take it, that's 2,500. That's 2,500, right, to amot. And the Gemara l'chol chad, but I divide it up, I give a section to each person, kama matile, how much does each individual tree get then if I divide the 2,500 amongst the three trees? So if I take 2,500 divided by three, I get 833 and a third amot per tree. So now I'm up to eight, getting closer to Ula's number, but no, not near there anymore. Ula said 1,024. We're at 833 and a third. So we're getting closer than 250, but we still don't have anything that's showing, right, that you are even the full amount, or the amount of sustenance or area that a tree covers is 1,024 square amot. Now, the difference between the two is that the two Mishnayot, which we just spoke about, one of them only required 250, and now we have a Mishnah that's requiring 833 and a third shetach for the trees. The difference is that the first Mishnah spoke about Eser Nitiot. Nitiot are saplings, young trees that were just planted, right? They only require 250 square amot of shetach around them to be plowed to take care of them. The second Mishnah is talking about Ilanot, full-grown trees. Full-grown trees, their roots extend further. They need more shetach around them to be plowed and taken care of in order to facilitate their growth. And therefore, they're entitled, each one's entitled to a shetach shetach of 833 and a third square amot for that can be plowed or taken care of.
That's
an itiyot, only an itiyot, but an itiyot. Stay ilan goes until Shavuot. There's a halacha Moshe Mitzinai that for nitiyot, yeah, saplings that are in, it has to be eser and a beitza. You're allowed to plow the whole beitza until Rosh Hashanah. So that's the halacha Moshe Mitzinai. So it says, right? So kama matilei tamni meya. We get 800 with plat in 30, plat in 3, ugetota in a third. So it says akate nefishalei de ula. Right? So what about Ula's number is much greater. We still give him 1,024 square amot versus 833 and a third. So when it says, Lodak. He wasn't so exact. Right? I mean, it's a big not exactitude here, but he wasn't so exact. But Mar doesn't even reject it for the gap or the par between the two numbers, but rejects it for Imur Damrinan Lodak Lachumra. Okay, you can say that it wasn't exact when you're Mimachir. About here, Lakula Lodak Miyamrinan. Says over here, Ula is being Mekil. Ula is saying you don't have to bring Bikurim from a tree that has anything within, if it's a shetach around it of 16 amot that reaches into your friend's property, you don't have to bring bikurim from that. That means that his shetach is much larger. That means that he's being mekel on people having to bring bikurim up to the mikdash for an area of 1,024 square amot, whereas the Mishnah tells us that it's only a square area of 833 and a third. So he's being mekel by extending the shetach, right, that is patur from mikra bikurim, or prata from bringing up Bikurim whatsoever. So if that's the case, how could you say that he wasn't Dak? Or again, if he was Machmir and he gave a smaller Shetach, that's one thing. But here he's being...
What's the case of Bikurim again from yesterday?
Bikurim is if your tree's roots extend into your friend's property, you may not bring up, or you either may not, or you cannot, or you should not bring up Bikurim to the...
16.
Within 16 amot. If your tree is within 16 amot of your friend's property, you cannot bring up Bikurim. So now, Ula is giving you a bigger area where until which you are patur from Bikurim, because like according to the Beit Sa'ah, right, you would only have a third of that Beit Sa'ah, which would be entitled to be patur from Bikurim if it reached into your friend's property, right? Whereas here, he's entitling you to a square area of 1,024 amot that reaches into your friend's area. So he's saying it's being mekel. That should be the case. Where it says, Misavarat biribua kaminan. Oh, wait a minute. You thought that Ula was speaking about a square, right? Biigula kaminan. He's talking about a circle. Meaning that you looked at an area where the tree was in the middle, and then you made a square around it of 16 amot. But that's not really, if the reach is 16 amot, it should be a radius that goes around the tree that makes a circle that is 16 amot in radius away from this tree. So if that's the case, Gemara says, Michtei. Kama rububa yoter al igul rivia. When it comes to the area of a circle that is inscribed in a square, meaning that the diameter of the circle and a side of the square are equal, in that case, the area of the circle is a 3/4, 75% of the area of the square. It's 1/4 difference in area, and that I showed you up top. That's the top area. If you look over here, in the top of the picture, if you take a square, right, that is D by D, right, diameter by diameter, which over here would be 16 by 16, right? If you see that, and you would place a circle into it, and that would be the diameter of the circle, right? What is the formula for the area of a square, right? Is it's length times width. Over here, length and width are the same, so it would be D times D, or D squared, right? D squared is the area of a square. Now, if you come look at a circle, how do you calculate the area of a circle? Right, the area of a circle is pi r squared, right? Pi times the radius squared. That will give you the right area of a pi. Now, if I substitute for radius, I substitute diameter, it would actually be half of the diameter squared, right, times pi. Right, so that gives me pi times 1/4 times d squared. Now, if I look, the Gemara is going to assume, and we've seen this a couple of times, that pi equals 3. So if I put in for pi, I put in 3, then I have, and I've shown you the formula here, I have 3, which is pi, times 1/4 d squared. And if I consolidate that, I basically get 3/4 d squared. So if I compare the area of a square, the area of a square is d squared, and the area of a circle is 3/4 d squared. So 75% of d squared. So if that's the case, right, that means that if I take the any area of a square and I multiply it by 74%, I will get the area of the circle. So in our case, we know that the area of the square is 1,024 amot, right, 32 by 32. So if I take 75% of that, it's on the bottom right, if you look on the bottom right, if I take 75% of that, I'm going to come out with 768 square amot. So that's an area of 768 square amot. Below that, I just showed you that it works with pi r squared as well. If you take 3 times 16 squared, you also come up with 768 square amot. This all assumes that pi, again, is 3. But if you do that, then the area is 768. Now, we're looking for an area in the Mishnah that says 833 and a third. Okay, so in this point, now we can say that Ula is Lodak, but Lodak Chumra. So that's what the Gemara is going to say now, right? Now, Pashaluhu. So now, what do you have? Zayin Meyav Shit Vintamya. 768, as we pointed out here. Now, the area of the circle would be 768 square amot. Akate. It's still Pashle Palga de Amto. There's still half an Amma left. And the Girsa here is probably incorrect. All right, it's pretty obviously. Rashi brings at the end of Rashi, he says, V'it de Garsi Pashle Trey Tilte de Amto. He says that it's left over 2/3 of an Amma. And if you look at the Tosfos, the second Tosfos de Amma, the Rabbeinu Tam also. Hochigaris Pashle Trey Tilte de Amto. It should be 2/3 of an Amma. All right, we'll go with that Girsa because it's almost obvious that Girsa is correct. Tosfos has one solution, which I'll share with you, that overcomes the issue and leaves it as a half amma. He actually gives two of those solutions. I'll give you the one that is a little easier to work with. So now, Hainu de Lodak, or the Chumra Lodak, that was that he wasn't exact, and he was the Chumra Lodak. So if you look at the bottom left of the sheets that I gave you, right, you can see here that we said that the Mishnah said that the area that a tree is entitled to is 833 and a third square amot. So if I want to know, if I had to have a circle with the area 833 and a third amot, if I make a circle with such an area, how do I come or how do I solve for what the radius, right, of such an area is? So I take pi r squared equals 833 and a third. And again, by substituting, right, the pi by 3, that means basically I have to take 833 and a third divided by 3, and then take the square root of that number. If I do that, I come out with 16 and 2/3. So that means the radius of a circle with an area of 833 and a third, amot, is 16 and 2/3. Ula said that the area around a tree that you're entitled to is 16 amot. So that's what the Gemara says over here, and that's why the Girsa probably should read 2/3 amot. The difference between Ula and the Mishnah is 2/3 of an amma. And that's v'hainu d'lo dak. I mean, the Mishnah says you can have 16 and 2/3 of a radius around you, which is the shetach that belongs to the tree, or the sustenance of the tree, and therefore you can plow it. And Ula was not, he dropped the fraction, and he just said 16 amot. So the 2/3 difference between Ula and the Mishnah is the difference between 833 and a third square amot and 768 square amot. And that solves your, right, that solves your problem. And that's what it means. Ula was it was machmir, and it was lodak. It wasn't dak. He took whole numbers, and then he was rounded it off to the nearest whole number, but the chumrah. So he rounded down to 16 instead of 16 and 2/3. And that would explain the girsa that Rashi brings at the girsa, and Rabbeinu Tam brings us the girsa over here, that it should be the difference is 2/3 amot. There is one shita I'll just share with you in Tosfos, which tries to explain the difference and says that it's a half amah, and that is because Ula's shita basically leaves out one important factor, which is, what about the tree itself? Right, the area that we are measuring here, we are measuring an area of 16 amot in every direction, right, which is a radius of 16 amot, but we're not accounting for the fact that there might be the tree actually takes up some space in the middle. So this sheet then tells us, says that the tree actually takes up a third by a third of an amma. And if once you do that, if the tree takes up a space of a third by a third of an amma, then the difference between Ula and the, right, and the Mishnah would be half an amma. Because Ula's shetach, all these calculations are without the tree in it. If you put the tree in it, then Ula's number would really be 16 and a sixth versus 16 and 2/3. The difference would be a half. Right, so if you take, right, if it's a third by a third the amma, then each part of the radius gets a sixth of that area. So it'd be 16 and a sixth versus the Mishnah, which says 16 and 2/3, so the differential will be a half. So that's how he upholds the girsa of saying that it's a half here and not 2/3. To me, it seems pretty obvious that the answer should have, the girsa should have been 2/3, and like they're trying to maneuver to uphold that girsa of half amma. Bezrat Hashem, I'll try to go through Rashi and Tosafot, go through calculations to show that it really is, that something that is 833 and a third amot, area of a circle, will actually give you a radius that is 16 and 2/3. And they have innovative ways of doing the math, because they didn't have, you know, the multiplication or the ability to do the division and multiplication that we do. So therefore, they have to do it by reorganizing the areas in order to do that. And Bezrat Hashem, I'll try to put it together so you can read it. It's not that it changes the meaning of the Gemara, but just that you can be able to read through the Rashi and the Tosfos. All right. Right, right. Exactly. All right, so now, Tashma. So we still don't have... Now we have a source, or quote-unquote source, for Ula, which is that we have a Mishnah that says 16 and 2/3, and he rounded it down to 16. Now the Gemara says, is it really true what Ula says? Tashma, hakone ilan v'karka'o, mevi v'koret. Someone who purchases a tree along with the land around it, or an entitlement to the land around it, then he can bring bikurim, and he reads mikra bikurim, because then it can say, asher tavi me artzecha, from your land. If you don't own the land, then it's not artzecha, you can't bring a, right, you can't bring and be correct. My love, koshu, but how much land do you need to have to be able to bring? It sounds like for the mission, there's no minimum requirement. Sounds like you're negotiable. Well, you're about the Ted Zayin Amot, right? Or, yeah, you're waiting for 16, right? 16 Amot that is around the tree. That would be what entitles you to bring and be correct.
Is there, just to be is there a problem with bringing, with designating something as Bikurim that really does not qualify as Bikurim?
Apparently, that's what they're saying.
No, it's not, because if you're making as we present, it's okay that he rounds it down. The end is that he's bringing something that's
right. It can't be korea, which is a declaration, which would be right, untruthful declaration. We don't want to have Sheker b'makom amigdash asher tavi ma'artzecha, that we don't say. Tosus asks your question. I mean, it's not. Why do you say it's the chumrah? Says that it, every tzad has a chumrah and a kula to it.
Right.
Right. So if you look at Tosfos the chumrah, which is what you're asking, he says im tomar v'anami kulahu adamaiti bikurim afkulahu mitrumo maser. Right, we can have a potter for Trumas and Maestros, so you can also have a cool on that side. Kiramina and Bamukha Despina. Veishomar de Ulo, Ariel Bamai, Deno may be betoch Shishesh Ramah, but Chutzle Shish Ramah, Pamim may be, Pamim may be. So he answers your question and says that Ula just addresses the 16 Amot. Within the 16 Amot, he does not address beyond the 16 Amot. Beyond the 16 Amot, you'll have very different situations where you will and you won't bring it. So he's only defining the area within the context of his 16 Amot, and that will answer your question here as well.
So it's 16 Amot.
Then we're not telling you what to do at that point from Ula's statement. Correct. All right, now... So the Gemara says, Tashma, we have another Mishnah, right? Someone who purchases two trees in his friend's land, he's then entitled, he brings the Bikurim, but does not read Mikra Bikurim, because he does not have Artzecha. Here he just purchased the trees. Hashlosha, if he does have three trees there, then we say that automatically, when one purchases three trees, he gets the land, the shetach around it, the land comes along with the trees. Because that's considered already a steilan, or some form of steilan, and therefore you get a shetach of property with it. Then mevi vikoret. Then you can bring the bikurim and read the mikra bikurim, because then you have mi'artzecha. My love, koshuhu. So again, the Gemara says, how much land do you need to bring it up? Does it sound like a kosher? There's no minimum standard that's mentioned in the Mishnah. Lo achanami tetzayin amot, right? Also over here, it's 16 amot. And the 16 amot will comply or be, right, in concert with what Ula says. Now we have the problem, which is a, right, the statement Rabbi Akiva that we've seen before. So in a number of places.
This rule that person said, three trees, is that specifically their contiguous? Let's say someone's got...
They have to be within a certain area. You're right. They have to be within. So Tashma, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Karka Kolcheho. There, I'm going to give you a whole bunch of dinim that apply to any amount of karka. Chayab bepeya. Number one is that you're chayav bepeya if you have any amount of karka. Ubi bikurim. You're chayav bikurim for even a kosher of karka. V'kutvin ala pruzbo. Right, that you can use that karka to write a pruzbo in order that your loans will not be forgiven when it comes to Shemitah, the Shemitah Ksafim. We talk about Shemitah Ksafim d'Rabbanan, and therefore the Rabbanan or Hillel was mitakin that the pruzbo, right, would protect those loans from going or being forgiven, because there's no yisur of lo yigos, because you're not going to go collect from your friend that you give it to over to Beis Din. You're mostly to Beis Din. Beis Din was only mitakin this in normal cases of loans. What are normal cases of loans? Where there's collateral to the loan. There's karka to the loan. Remember, we spoke about this. Since they did not have, you're not allowed to charge interest, they had no way to adjust for risk. Right? So the risk in the loan, right, couldn't be adjusted by the interest rate if you weren't charging interest. The only way that you would ever lend money is with karka, with underlying collateral. So if a person lends with collateral, that's a normal loan, and that's what the principle was mutukan for. If a person doesn't lend with karka or doesn't have karka as collateral, then that's not a normal loan, and the takana does not apply. So what type, how much land do you need? Rabbi Akiva says, koshu, any amount of land. The nickname, this is what we saw in Kedushin, iman, nechasim shein lehem achrayut. That if you want to combine, meaning that we said that if you make a kinyan on nechasim sheyesh lehem achrayut, Ayesh Lemechavim means real property. If you make a kinyan on real property, then you don't have to make a separate kinyan on the mitaltalim, on those that are not real property, and they will come along with the kinyan. So if you have a kinyan kesef, shtar, and chazakah that applies to real property, that will bring along with it other items like mitaltalim, which normally that type of kinyan would not work for them. You need a kinyan mishicha. Over here, the kinyan on the karka would suffice for all of them. How much karka do you need? Karka koshuhu. So now we have a problem. By Bikurim, Rabbi Akiva clearly stated that Bikurim is koshu. And we know that it's literally a koshuhu here, because if you remember in the Gemara in Kiddushin, the Gemara wants to know, Kinyan Agav, right, Kinyan Agav, that's where the Gemara discussed it, whether literally the Mataltim, it's superim, do they have to be piled onto it? The Gemara says, Ma'avot, what's it roi for koshuhu? The Gemara says, no problem, Ma'machat, putting on a pin. The Gemara says, what do you mean, putting a pin? The Mishnah came to teach us about a case of a pin on a piece of land? That doesn't make any sense. No, it's a pin that has a diamond on top. Right? And that's the Gemara says, that's what the Kinyan Agav that we're saying about with a koshu of karka. Right? So that's the, we know for certain that it's a real koshu, that the Gemara thinks it's a real koshu. It's a real koshu, then what are you doing by Bikurim? The Gemara says, achamai skinan bechite. Oh, you forgot. Bikurim, we always think of fruits. Bikurim actually come from the Shivat HaMinim. And two of the Shivat HaMerit is Chita and Sora. Grains are a part of the Shivat HaMinim. So it doesn't necessarily have to be talking about a tree in this case. So we're talking about koshu, karka koshu, we're talking about chitim. Bring him chitim. Dekanami, diktani, kol, shehu. Right? That is the case here because it says, right, kol. Any amount of karka would suffice over here. So shema mina, that is the case that we're not talking about trees or fruit trees over here, but rather we are talking about, right, chita over here. So Gemara says, well, I just point out that we know that grains also need some sort of spacing of 4 tefachim. So what happened to the minimum 4 tefachim? They're also yonek, not directly below them, but even have a space out of them of 4 tefachim. So Tosus wants to suggest here that the ikar yenika of a chita is directly below it. There's some extended yinika, but this is like a lower level, a secondary yinika that owes up to 4 tefachim. He says, I'll show you that it's true, because it happens by trees also. How far do we say you have to plant a tree from your friend's property? According to Rabbanan, you have to plant it 25 amot away. Yet, when Ula comes, right, Charuv is 50 amot, but here, what does Ula say? Ula says that the yinika is only 16 amot. Wait, if you have to plant 25 amot away, what is the 16 amot? So that's what Tosa says, that the ikar yinika of the tree is within the 16 amot. Now the roots reach out to 25 amot and still will give some sort of secondary, right, sustenance to the tree, but yet the ikar part is 16. So same thing by chita. The ikar part of the sustenance, the chita is directly below it. There's this secondary area where the roots reach, which will be the 4 tefachim that are here, and that's why we're not worried about the 4 tefachim. Right, Tashma, Ilan, Miksato ba'aretz u'miksato b'chutz la'aretz. You have a tree that is half in Eretz Yisrael, half outside of Eretz Yisrael. Tevel b'chulin mu'ravim ze b'zeh divrei Rabbi. Rabbi says that there's tevel and chulin mixed in here. You can't separate. What grows out of this tree is a product of being sustained both from the roots that are in Eretz Yisrael and the roots that are in chutz la'aretz. And therefore you have tevel and chulin mixed up and you have to deal with it by being mafish from somewhere else on this item. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Hagadel b'chiyuv, chayav. Hagadel b'patur, patur. It has to do with the distribution of that which is there. Now Rashi, this was the Machlokas Rashi, we saw this in Gemara Bava Metzia, Machlokas Rashi and Tosafot, about how to explain this Gemara. Rashi says that Gadel b'chiyuv and Gadel patur has to do where the roots are. The division of the roots will determine. Right, so that Tosafot over there says that it has to be the branches that we're talking about, and the division of the branches, where the fruits are on the branches, will make a difference. Because we saw there was Machlokas Rav and Shmuel about it, and that was Rashi and Tosafot discussed whether Rav and Shmuel's Machlokas are determining where the roots are placed or where the branches are. And
logically, you would think in the context of where it's coming in over here, the roots, the whole discussion over here has been in terms of the roots.
Right, but the question is then, where's the fruit distributed on the tree? Because if you believe that there's breira, that where the roots are affects where the fruit is, the location of the branches is also important, the fruits is important. It's not that any fruit that's found on there, you have to divide, somehow know how to divide the fruit up. You can't just say half and half. We have to say which half of the fruit belongs to Eretz, which half belongs to Chutz Laretz. Right? So Mara says, Akan lo pligi ela demar sever yesh breira umar sever ein breira. Everybody agrees that the tree is yonik, partly from Eretz Yisrael and partly from Chutz Laretz, but yet, but the problem is that when it goes into the trunk, do they remain separate? And therefore all the fruits found inside of Eretz Yisrael are kadosh, or have kedushat ha'aretz, and all the fruits found outside of Eretz Yisrael are chulin, meaning that wherever the roots are sustaining from, the same fruits on that side only get sustenance from that side of the tree, that's the breira, or the other possibility is no, that it mixes in the trunk, and we can't differentiate, and all the fruits are mixed up. That's what they're arguing about. Ava gadel bibtur, tibia go patur.
Are they arguing about the principle of breira in general, or whether we can apply breira?
Right, maybe whether you can apply Breira in this case. Not whether Breira applies in general, but here maybe Breira is not relevant. But everybody agrees that whatever grows, grows. Everybody agrees that the roots that are in Eretz Yisrael, right, only get their sustenance from Eretz Yisrael, okay? And the roots in Chutz Laretz only get their sustenance from Chutz Laretz. But we're able to divide the tree up and say that, right, that the parts of the tree from Eretz Yisrael don't go into Chutz Laretz, and the Chutz Laretz don't go into Eretz Yisrael. But that's not, that's against what we're suggesting over here, that a tree expands its area of sustenance 16 amot in every direction. Over here, we seem to be able to clearly divide the tree up and say that on one side it gets from here, and the other side gets from here. Is that the case? So everybody agreed that if it was clearly gadel v'patur, that it would be patur. Where it says, achu mafsigina d'mafsig tsunama. Here we're talking about a case where there's bedrock in between. I mean, the tree is sitting on an area of bedrock, and therefore the roots that go one direction go the other direction are clearly defined, or the parts of the tree on each side are clearly defined, and the roots are not going to reach to the other side. Had there not been tsunama and ochanami, they could reach the other side, but here there's this bedrock separating them. So Mara says, Ihochi, my time at the Rabbi. If that's the case, what's the reasoning behind Rabbi? Dehadre arve. Right, so that they get back, when the roots come back in, they rejoin. So what happens is, you have almost like two trunks of a tree, each of them sitting on each side of the bedrock. They come together, and then they combine again. When they rise up to be the main trunk, they kind of they're interwoven, or they grew back together, and then together they make a single trunk. So that's to explain Rabbi's position. I mean, if you believe that the trunks were separate all the way up, then Rabbi's position that they get mixed makes no sense. So what the Gemara suggests over here is that the roots, or the bottom of the tree, are actually split on either side of this bedrock, but as they rejoin in the trunk area, they are a single entity, and that single entity causes them to mix, and therefore the fruits are not clearly defined as either being of Chutz Laretz or of Eretz Yisrael. Gemara says, what's the argument between right, Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel over here? Mar sarva ravira mevalbel. Mar sarva ha'ilu chudei ha'ilu chudei koyi. So that they argue about when you have roots, or like the beginning of a trunk, that are separate at the bottom, and then they grow together. When they grow together, does that allow for exchange of the sustenance, the liquids, the nutrition of the tree, or do they remain separate all the way up? Even though now they've grown together, each side remains with where it's come from or its origination, and therefore you could separate between the fruits on the side of Eretz Yisrael and the side of Chutz Laretz. So again, it's almost like a machlokas, reduced it to machlokas and mitzias over here about the ability to, with the trees that grow together, do they recombine assets, or the assets remain separate, right, when they grow back together? Now, the Gemara says, V'sheshesrei amah v'tulo. Wait a minute. You think 16 amot is sufficient? Until now, we're arguing that ula is too much at 16 amot. Now the Gemara says, wait, is 16 amot really sufficient? Right, v'atnan. We have a Mishnah. Marchikim et ilan min abor, chaf hei amah. That's what we just discussed. That the Rabbanan require you to distance a ilan from a boar 25 amot. Mar says, I'm Rabbi, mizal tuva azle. Roots extend further than 16 amot. If you cut roots beyond 16 amot, you won't affect the quality or the sustenance of the tree. So they do grow. Roots will grow past 16 amot. They'll grow all the way until 25 amot. But if you cut roots between 16 and 25 amot, you won't affect the growth. You won't stunt the growth of the tree in any way. Whereas if you cut roots within 16 amot of the tree, you will affect the growth of the tree. You will affect the quality of sustenance that it is drawing from the ground around it.
This is what Akushe Lamakushe is referring to. to what it does to the karka, right? That up to 69 amos, it will draw the nutrients out of the karka. It's meaning that if you're...
it's saying the same thing in reverse, which is, right, that, right. It only draws nutritional value in the first 69 amos that is so integral that it's taking a full amount, whereas beyond that point, it's not really... Right, it's drawing its real sustenance from there. It's the same thing in the opposite picture from the perspective of the owner of the karka rather than the perspective of the owner of the tree. So thank you. So yeah, the Rav Dimi, Amar, by mine Rish Lakish from Rabbi Yochanan. So when Rav Dimi says, he says, Rav Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan, Yilana Samuch Lamitzar B'toch Yudvad Avamah, Zayin Amot. Right, so you have a tree that is on the border within 16 Amot of the border. Maho, what's the din? Amalei Gazlan who? He's a Gazlan, like Ula said. You don't bring Bigurim. Kiata Rabin, right? So many times we have this in the Gemara. You have Rav Dimi and Rabin who are traveling, right, back and forth, and they're bringing the Memorot of Yochanan from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. So we have one report from Rav Dimi, and now we have a second report of the same case, right, from Rabin. Amar Rav Yochanan, Echad Ilana Samuch Lemitzar, Vechad Inanu Te Mivi Bikore. That even a tree that is adjacent to the border, or a tree that is even branches leaning over into your friend's property, you can bring the bikurim, and you can be koreh. You can bring the mikra bikurim. Why? Shamanat kein inchil Yeshua Yisrael at the aretz. Those were part of the conditions when Yeshua set up the land. Those are part of the conditions that he set it up. Rashi says he made this a social contract between people. That they won't be makpid on such an item, meaning that even though technically or halachically they were entitled, right, to not entitled to bring bikurim. Number one. Number two is entitled to prevent such a situation. Nevertheless, the condition or the social contract between the people when Yeshua brought them to the land was that they would be mochel on such an item, that they would not be makpid on these types of proximities. Alright. Ilan, shunote desne chavero, kutzitz, malea mardea, agabe machvesha. Friend, if a tree that is growing over to your friend's property, the branches are growing over to your friend's property, you have the persons whose property that it's going on to may cut away the branches in order to allow him to work his field. What is working his field? To plow the field with an animal. How do you plow the field with an animal? You have a rider or a driver behind him who has some sort of darbane, right, a prod or a whip that pushes the animal to work. So you have to give enough room under the tree, clearance. You have to give enough clearance for the worker who is working with the plow and his mardeya to get under the tree. So you're allowed to clear away the branches that are lower than that clearance in order to not, so it doesn't prevent you from plowing your field. Ubecharu v'shikma, when it comes to a sycamore or a carob, kenegeda mishkolet, then you take a plumb line, right, look at the exact line of the wall, and you cut all the branches above it, because since we saw this before, that a chorv and shikma, the branches are very thick. They're very thick. They're going to cause shade over that area, not to let the sun through, and it'll ruin or make you unable to plant in that area. So we don't say that he can grow his tree over into your land and then damage your land. That we don't give him entitled to do. So therefore, you let it cut the branches to give not only clearance, but to give light into that area so you can plant in that area. Beit HaShlachim, Kol HaIlan Keneged HaMashkolet. When it comes to Beit HaShlachim, where in those areas they need as much clearance of sunlight as you can get, in those areas we say you can cut away all the Ilanot. Abash Omar, Kol Ilan, Srak, Keneged HaMashkolet. When it comes to trees, we're talking about all non-fruit-bearing trees. You can go against the plumb line, against the straight-up line over where the border is, but not by fruit-bearing trees. So where it says, where is Abba Shaul speaking about in our Mishnah? Ibalu, Abba Shaul, our Reisha Kai, or Seifa Kai? Is Abba Shaul speaking about the Reisha or the Seifa of our Mishnah? When he comes and says, this din only applies to non-fruit-bearing trees, is he talking about the Reisha and talking about, right, that's the only case, and he's being makil and allowing you to cut any non-fruit-bearing trees, not just the charuv and the shikma. Or he's talking about the seifa, and he's saying, no, you cannot cut any tree you want when it comes to Beit HaShlachim. You can only cut non-fruit-bearing trees. So, then it is the chumra. So is he the kula and he's speaking about the reisha, or is he the chumra and speaking about the seifa? The Gemara says, Tashma, the Tanya Beit HaShlachim, Abba Shaul Omer, Kol Ilan, Keneged HaMashkolet, Mipnei Shatzel, Ra, the Beit HaShlachim. So any ilan, right, you can cut keneged hamashkol because tzel is bad for the Beit HaShlachim. Shma mina a reisha kai. It's clear that he's talking about the reisha. Shma mina. He says, Amar Vashim matnita nami deka. Our Mishnah seems to indicate that. Diktani kol ilan srak. When Abba Shaul comes to state his opinion, he says, kol ilan srak. Every non-fruit-bearing tree. Now, what did the Tanakhama say? In the first part of the mission, the Tanakhama says that the only thing you could connect all the two branches up to the border is a charuv and a shikma, just two trees. So then, Abba Shaul comes along and says, no, it doesn't just apply to a charuv. It says, kol ilan srak, every non-fruit-bearing tree, this din applies to it. Whereas if he was commenting on the seifa, what did the Tanakhama say in the seifa? Tanakhama says, kol ilan, every tree you can cut up against the border, right, straight up a line up from the border. Then all of a sudden, Abba Shaul comes down, no, he says, kol ilan srak, every non-fruit-bearing tree. Why would he use the word kol? Meaning that he is now reducing the number of trees that have this din. The Tanakhama says kol because it's every tree. But now all of a sudden, you know, Abba Shaul comes and says kol ilan srak. That's not what he's saying. He should say rak ilan srak, or something that is a limiting factor, not an inclusive factor. And therefore, Rav Ashi says it's meduyak that Abba Shaul is commenting on the resha, not on the seifa. Yomar bishlema resha koi haino detani kol ilan. Eli amar to seifa. You say he's talking about the second of the Mishnah, right? Kai ilan srak mi ba'ilei. You should just say srak ilan srak mi ba'ilei. Ela lav shvamina a resha koi shvamina. You shouldn't have added in the word kol. The word kol, right, that seems to indicate that it's additive rather than, right, subtractive, and that's only true of the Risha, not true of the Seifa. Right, it's the next Mishnah. Ilan shunotelu shutarabim, a tree that goes out, or the branches extend over to the Rishutarim. Kotseitz kireshi gamal over v'rochvo. You can cut away enough so that the usage of the Rishut HaRabim is not impeded. What's the usage of a Rabim? The highest thing that you should use in the Rishut HaRabim is a person riding a camel. Person riding a camel is the highest clearance you need. So therefore you have to cut the tree back so that clearance is available. You only have to cut back the amount of space of a loaded camel. A loaded camel that has either flax on it or twigs on its back, that's what you have to cut away. I'm clearly stating that Rabbi Yehuda is the kula, right? The Gemara is going to ask, is he really the kula or the chumra? Right? Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol ilan, keneged ha-mashkolot pnei ha-tum'ah. Shimon says, no, that when any tree that extends into Rishut HaRabim, you can cut straight line up on the border, because we're afraid of tum'ah. We'll see what the problem is with tum'ah in a second. Man tana diminizokin, butter umduna dehashtraz lina. Who is the tana that believes that we look at the current or the status quo to determine what we do with nizakin, even though once you do or you take action here, it's going to become a problem again? So for instance, in our case here, the tree, when you cut the branches back so that there's clearance in Shutra Abim, the tree is eventually going to grow back and cause you the problem again. Nevertheless, we say to you, go ahead and cut it so that you rectify the problem for the current time, even though again and again, right, so you're going to have the problem be extended or repeated. So I'm Reish Lakish, Machloket Shnuya. It's a Machlokes Tanaim, V'Rabbi Eliezer Hi. And Rabbi Eliezer is the author of this opinion, did not. We have a Mishnah that teaches us, Mishnah Babakayin Yosim Chlau Tachar Rishut HaRabim. One may not dig cavities or hollow spaces under the Rishut HaRabim. Barot Shechim U'Me'arot, right, any type of cisterns, right, different types of water holes or usage spaces, you may not dig under the Rishut HaRabim. Rabbi Eliezer Matir. Rabbi Eliezer says you can dig. You can do that as long as you've left enough property, or you've made it secure enough, or there's integrity to the road above, that a camel, loaded camel, can walk over it carrying bricks and it won't collapse. So as long as you ensure that the use of the Rishut HaRabim is not compromised, then you can go ahead and do it. Now again here with Rabbi Eliezer, but we know eventually that it will deteriorate. Even though he's left sufficient strength in it, over time of usage, it will deteriorate. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer says you are permitted to dig the hole, even though in the end, in the long run, it's probably not the best interest of the Rishut HaRabim, because you can protect at this point in time. Same thing with the tree. Even though in the long run, it's not great for the Rishut HaRabim, because they have to keep coming and cutting the trees back. Nevertheless, since you could cut the tree back now and solve the problem, we don't tell you cut the tree down, we just say cut the branches. So that's what Rabbi Reish, right, Reish Lakish says, that Rabbi Lez is the author of our Mishnah, whereas Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Afilu Tamer Rabbanon. Right, well, even the Rabbanan could be the author of our Mishnah. Even though by Borot, they do not permit you to dig, or Chalalot, they don't permit you to dig under the Rishut HaRabim. Nevertheless, Hotam Zimin de Machfit Velavadate. Over there, you're not constantly vigilant and sitting vigil over the board to see that when the Rishut HaRabim gets soft and it's going to collapse in, that you're going to take care of it. I mean, that's something you check once every while. You know, you come around, the public works, so come around and make sure that it's good. Once a Yovel, or once a Shemitah. right? Kama kama kaitzle. Over here, every time he walks outside, you see the tree, you can cut it, you'll look into cut it. It's not just checking safety, you can clearly see that if the branch is over, go ahead and cut it. So the Rabbanan would agree over here, since the problem could be solved quickly and is visible to everybody that it needs to be taken care of, therefore we say, okay, go ahead and do it and cut the branches. But where it takes much more involved inspection, we're going to say, no, you can't do it because it'll end up collapsing without anybody ever figuring out that the problem existed. Right now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Gamal Taun Pishtano Chavlei Zmura. The clearance that you have to leave is a loaded Gamal. Ibailu, Shira de Rabbi Yehuda Nafish, or Dimer Shira de Rabbanu Nafish. Who's bigger? A person riding a Gamal is higher clearance, or a Gamal loaded is higher clearance? Where it says, Pshita de Shira de Rabbanu Nafish. It's clear that the position of the Rabbanu is greater. A person riding a Gamal is higher up than a loaded Gamal. Why? Disakadat Chashur de Rabbi Yehuda Nafish. If you think that the Shur of Rabbi Yehuda is greater, a loaded Gamal is greater, then Rabbanu Bishura de Rabbi Yehuda. Then the Rabbanan suggests that you only have to give clearance for a person riding a Gamal. What are you going to do when a loaded Gamal comes by? Well, you just say you can't go there? I mean, then how are the Rabbanan going to solve that problem? So what are you going to say? How does Rabbi Yehuda solve the problem the other way around? Elamai, Shira, the Rabbanan Nafish. Right, so if you say that the Rabbanan is greater, riding a Gamal is higher, then Rabbi Yehuda be sure the Rabbanan may have it. Then what does Rabbi Yehuda do when a person's riding a Gamal comes by? I mean, if he's only saying that you have to give clearance for a camel, loaded camel, and a person riding a camel is higher up, then when he shows up, what are you going to say to him? Too bad you can't go through. What's the answer? Efshar degachin v'chalif tutei. A human being can adjust. He can duck down and go under. Whereas, right, the load doesn't move, so you can't adjust the load. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, if I clear enough for a load, that's fine, because even if a human being is higher, he could bend over and get through without being caught by the tree. Whereas the Rabbanan say, no, we're going to give you the Rishut Rabbim should not be compromised in any way, and we're going to give the highest possible clearance, which is a person riding a Gamal. Right, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says that you cut the trees, the branches away because of the tumah. The matana mipnei ohel hatumah. It's not just tumah, but it is ohel tumah. I mean that the problem here is that the tree is mahio over the possibility of tumah and something else in the Rishut Rabbim. Then you can have right to, without the unbeknownst those people going in the Rishut Rabbim, they're all going to become tumah because of tumat ohel. Shemar says pshita. Of course, we're talking about ohel tumah. What else would you be thinking about? Why else would you have a problem here? Shemar says mipnei tumah tnan. That's what it says. Shemar says imi masnisan. If I just said the mishnah mipnei tumah, haba mino dilma mighty orev tumah. That the bird, a raven, will bring tumah v'shadi hatam, and he will leave it over there. V'sagia b'tchude be'alma. That it'll be enough just to thin out the branches. Why? Because the problem of the orev coming and leaving a piece of tumah there, right? Either it won't be hidden, or it won't be thick enough that it holds the tumah to stay there. So meaning that either way, the possibility is if I thinned out the branches, either the tumah, right, will not be hidden because it'll fall down to the bottom, or the orev cannot place it there because it will not be thick enough to hold it, and he won't place it there. And if he does place it there, when you thin out the branches, what will happen to the tumah? It will fall down to the bottom. And when it falls down to the bottom, right, the Rabbeinu Gershon points out that it'll be under the part that you've cleared out, so there won't be any tumat ohel. Right, that's a... I mean, it's not so exacting. I don't think just because you thin it out doesn't mean that where it falls, it can be directly below the pace where the opening is. So Rashi and the Tosfot seem to say, no, that once you've thinned it out, then it's not, the tumah won't stay there or the bird won't land there, and therefore you're not going to have a problem of tumah hanging around that you don't know about. But if it's thick, then you would have that problem, despite the fact that it's not an issue of ohel or not ohel. I would have thought just you have to thin it out, kamash malan, that we say that the Tana spoke about, he spoke about tumat ohel. When he's talking about tumat ohel, it means you cut the branches entirely, and we don't think about thinning the branches out. We wipe them out, so there is no question or problem of tumat ohel here. Right? We'll stop over here.